Hello, I'm Javier Fernandez, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Hi, this is Kurt Browning.
Hi, I'm Sam Donovan, Ice Network's resident fashion expert.
Hi, this is Sasha Cohen.
Hi, I'm Maya Shibutani.
And I'm Alex Shibutani.
Hi, it's Julianne Seguin.
And Charlie Bilodeau.
Hi, everybody, this is Johnny Weir.
And hey, this is Paul Wiley, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Hey, everyone, I'm Jeremy Abbott.
Hi, this is Kenneth White.
This is Ben Augusto.
I'm Dylan Moskovich.
And I'm the Lubov Ilyushishkina.
Hey, guys, what's up? This is John Coughlin, two-time U.S. champion.
Hey, this is Ashley Wagner.
Oh, bonjour, je m'appelle Morgan Cipray.
Hi, this is Vanessa James.
Hi, this is Brian Boitano.
Hey, guys, it's Christy Yamaguchi here.
I'm Madison Cha.
And I'm Evan Bates.
Hi, this is Caitlin Osmond, three-time Olympic medalist.
I'm Alexa Kinnearum.
And Chris Kinnearum.
Hey guys, this is Nathan Chen.
Hi, I'm Patrick Chan.
Hi, this is Megan Duhamel.
And I'm Eric Radford.
Hi, I'm Brian Orser.
Hi, I'm Maria Nagasu.
Hi, this is Adam Rippon, and you're listening to Ice Talk.
Welcome to episode 72 of Ice Talk, the figure skating podcast from Ice Network. This is a very exciting episode. We're not in our usual digs. We actually have a pretty good view, I would say, and we're in the studio of Jackie Wong. Is that what we would call it? Your apartment is doubling as our studio?
Yeah, sometimes when I say from the Ice Network studios in downtown,
you're
Manhattan,
actually
here.
Sitting at this very table.
Actually here.
Well, it's a special episode this week because it's our final episode with Ice Network, and we decided to, in a special way, try to retrace the tracks of Ice Network and the website and what it's been for over the last 10 years. So at the table, along with my co-host Jackie Wong, myself, Nick McCarville, is Mickey Brown, who's been our fearless leader for this podcast the last 2 years. He's also the, what do you even call yourself? The overlord of icenetwork.com? Is that your official title?
That's what others, I think, call me. That's how I'm referred to by my employees, I think. But no, technically, my title is managing producer.
Right. Yeah. I had written managing producer down, but overlord just felt right in the
moment.
Yeah,
I'll take overlord.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
And also, I counted, you guys, making her 10th appearance. Actually, I think it's your number 11, Lynn Rutherford. You're our most welcomed back guest on Ice Talk.
In honor of Rafa Nadal, I'm considering it the undecima.
That's perfect. Well, you must have done something right if she's come back 11 times now, Lynn Rutherford.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, but can we just have a moment that, you know, Mickey Brown, editor of Ice Talk, is finally making his appearance?
This is your debut, right? Maybe at one point you were like yelling in the background of one of our episodes, don't ask that question.
This is my debut. It'll be my first and my last appearance on Ice Talk, and I've been looking forward to this for a long time since we started to kind of plan out this episode. I'm ready to take a little stroll down memory lane.
Well, that's what we're going to do. We're going to go back and look at what's been special about this website. This podcast has been a very small part of a lot of the blood, sweat, and tears and cheese it dust that Mickey Brown has gone through at Ice Network the last 10 years. We do have Cheez-Its. We've got a few adult beverages. We've got a beautiful sunset over Manhattan. And Kate Sullivan, our fearless producer, is sitting with her earphones on. So I think we're going to have a pretty good time. But Mickey, I want to go to you first. And also, you know, throughout the episode, what we're going to do is we're going to dip into some contributors, including Phil Hirsch, Sarah Brannon, Lois Elfman, a lot of the names and the mainstays from Ice Network. And they're going to tell us their favorite memories. But way back when, Ice Network began when, and you were there from its infancy, really?
Well, technically, I was not.
Okay, corrected. Sure. I'm usually at least corrected once on the podcast, so
yes,
there we
go. Yes, we got it out of the way early this time.
Thank you for that.
So Ice Network launched in 2007, and I was still working at U.S. Figure Skating at the time. I was there from 2007. I had been there from starting in 2005, and I was there in 2007 when Ice Network launched, and then I took over this role in 2011. So Ice Network launched 2007. The person who was in my role at that time, her name was Linda Przygodzki. She still works at MLB Advanced Media. She's the one who got the site off the ground, who recruited talented writers like Lynn Rutherford right here, among many others. And she was really the one who was responsible for, in the early days, for building Ice Network from the ground up, making it into, you know, what it became, a very, you know, respected journalistic enterprise, I'd like to think at least. And she did a really great job kind of laying the groundwork in those first few years. When I worked at US Figure Skating and Ice Network was launched, she and I kind of worked in tandem a bit. And I would, you know, she was a little new to the sport. She, you know, she followed it as a fan and on kind of a casual basis. And I kind of helped her along a little bit.
Sounds familiar to me.
Oh, you came in as an expert.
Still strong learning curve.
Lynn can speak more to this because she worked with Linda a lot in those early years. She's one of the biggest reasons why Ice Network kind of became what it did. And she definitely helped me along a lot. Once I took this job in 2011, she was my supervisor for a number of years. So I owe a lot to her.
Lynn, what do you remember? If you were there at the start, Mickey wasn't, as I incorrectly stated. But and two, I want to add this because I don't know this, and Mickey can speak to it as well. But at that time, you know, Ice Network became this thing. But what was the response among fans? And how did you? I think Mickey was saying the first event you guys live streamed was a junior
Grand Prix in Lake Placid, New York.
And yeah. Lynn, you wrote on that event, right? Or you wrote around that event?
I did. My first article was back in the fall of 2007. And yeah. I mean, I don't know if you were born then.
I was an infant. Thank you for that.
In a diaper. And they contacted me because I had written a bit for the magazine and somehow they got my name. I had written a magazine up in Canada for a while, and I was thrilled to get an opportunity to write about figure skating, which is always a great passion of mine, and to sort of transition out of a job that I'd had on Wall Street for many years. I was unceremoniously fired, and I thought, well, you know, hey, this is so different.
Yeah.
You know, let me start a career as a figure skating writer. And it was, you know, not quite as remunerative as my Wall Street career, but it was a lot more fun.
No, it wasn't?
No. Not quite, but we'll see. And, you know, I met Linda at Skate America.
Reading, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
2007.
Spot of the East. And, you know, she said, hey, you know, I'm coming aboard here. I know a little bit about figure skating, but, you know, hey, I'd really appreciate you and, you know, helping me along. And by the way, can you introduce me to Brian Boitano? And things
and
like
by
that.
The way, there we go.
And things like that. And, you know, it just kind of took off from there. And, you know, it's been a huge, wild ride. Mm-hmm. And honestly, I've loved almost every minute of it.
Yeah. No, and I think Mickey would agree. He's loved every minute of it too.
Every single second.
And I
never a bad moment.
As long as you had your Cheez-Its by you. I would assume, as most listeners know, so Ice Network, the contract that existed no longer or was switched over in a sense, and so NBC will take on the streaming. Ice Network's final day is June 30th.
June 29th. June 29th is actually the last day that the site will be live.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the contract runs out on the 30th. The 29th is a Friday. Easier to shut down a site on a Friday than on a Saturday.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The moral is, everybody, Google my Ice Network Ice Dance articles now.
Before they're gone forever.
They are gone.
We'll dip around, obviously. Sure. But will the site live on at all in the future?
Not in its current form. Some of the content's going to go over to NBC Sports. It's being currently in the process of migrating it over to their platforms. Some of the content's going to go to US Figure Skating, and it'll live in their fan zone, which they're going to be kind of relaunching.
Rebranding, relaunching.
I'm not sure that everything that's on Ice Network currently is going to make it over to those two places, but a lot of it will.
Yeah. Got it. So watch that space, not watch this space.
Correct.
Watch that space.
Yes. Go to those places for all of your figure skating coverage starting July 1.
But Ice Talk is going to continue to live on Apple Podcasts.
Good.
And you can always go to rockerskating.com also.
Yes. Well, we'll give Jackie his plug for sure. And yes, the podcast lives on in its...
For eternity.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything lives on in my memory.
Well, one of the many contributors to IceNetwork.com more recently has been Phil Hirsch. Of course, he covered the Olympics for years, I think over three decades at the Chicago Tribune, and came to the site recently. Here's what Phil had to say about his Ice Network time.
This is Philip Hirsch. I had covered figure skating for 35 years, and at 10 straight Winter Olympics, when I took a buyout from the Chicago Tribune in November 2015. I hoped to continue getting paid for covering the sport at least through the Olympic cycle that would end in 2018, and I am forever grateful that beginning in February 2016, Ice Network provided me the chance to do that. It allowed me to chronicle the rise to dominance of Russian women in singles, the unique environment Brian Orser and his team created at the Cricket Club in Toronto to help produce champions like Yuzuru Hanyu and Javier Fernandez, the quad revolution in men's skating and the emergence of Nathan Chen, as well as being able to bear journalistic witness to some of the greatest performances in skating history. Fernandez free skate at the 2016 Worlds, Hanyu's free skate in 2017, Evgenia Medvedeva's flawless skating at 2017 Worlds, Chen's history-making quads among them. My favorite moments came from working with two indefatigable and talented Ice Network colleagues, Mickey Brown and Lynn Rutherford, at the Olympics in South Korea. To me, the rewards of covering an Olympics are greater if you do it as part of a team. And every time I reread the stories we produced at the 2018 Winter Games, I take pride in knowing our team was as good and our stories as thorough and wide-ranging as those of any of our competitors. So, to Ice Network, awe atque vale.
So, good to hear from Phil. Always full of life, Jackie. And I actually want to bring you in here at this point because you sort of joined, as I did, in sort of the latter stages of Ice Network. But for you and your work on rocker skating, and I guess what was sort of the chance for you to come into Ice Network and how have you enjoyed it? No pressure, Mickey's sitting right next to you.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, I feel like it was all of a sudden like Mickey emailed me and was like, hey, we have this podcast that's happening. You want to be a contributor? I was like, sure. You know, when I first started writing about figure skating in 2008, 2009, it was really just an outlet for me to do something other than what I did in my normal life. I never thought that it would kind of balloon into this craziness that it has become. You know, for me, being part of Ice Network as part of this podcast, you know, I never wrote for Ice Network. I never really cared to write for anything but my own outlet. So Right. It was perfectly fine. But being part of the podcast has been really amazing in the sense that I've got to really just expand my horizons in the way that I cover figure skating. You know, besides just, you know, tweeting 5 tweets a second, you know, it's a different way of thinking about people, thinking about skaters, thinking about the audience, thinking about the entire skating world as it is. And I think this podcast has really kind of changed my outlook on skating in general.
Yeah, we feel as though we've done a pretty good job around here. I know that you've done several podcasts from this very table where we sit.
Yes.
I've done one from my car in Montana in the hospital parking lot. Nothing bad happened, but in the parking lot of a hospital. I did one in Hong Kong, you and I did, from the hotel.
Yeah.
Some random locations.
Yeah, I think you've called me when I was in Harrisburg in DC. We've done stuff in like live in at competition venues in other places. It's been a very mobile experience. I mean, we use the studio quite a bit, but I think the mobility that we've had was a good thing.
We still never did our post Skate America McDonald's podcast.
Oh, that
but
was,
maybe we'll do that next year.
That what we call Ice Talk After Dark.
Yeah, exactly. Let's go back to, you know, sort of the early days. And Mickey, you were mentioning to me on email that there were names including Sarah Hughes, Nancy Kerrigan, Tara Lipinski, Tanith Belbin at the time that really, you know, were contributors and just kind of shaped for people that don't know. You know, once you guys got launched and you said you became a part of the site, what were the early days like?
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges of the early days was just, I think, getting people to take us seriously and really being viewed as a legitimate website and a news source. And I think being able to attach names like Sarah Hughes, like Nancy Kerrigan, Tara Lipinski, Johnny Weir did some announcing for us back before he became a star and a pop culture icon. People like that, simply having their name on the website and being able to say that they're affiliated with ICE Network, Tanith Belbin, like you said, as well. That was really important to us, and maintaining relationships with people like that. Because I think at first when we launched and in the early days, I think some fans maybe thought because of our affiliation with US figure skating that we were going to be more of like the PR arm of the organization. And so I think we needed to kind of, you know, clearly define who we were and, you know, kind of our voice, distinguish ourselves from US figure skating, which they've allowed us to do. And I'm very thankful for that. In those early days, you know, bringing on some of those big names definitely helped us gain credibility and legitimacy in a lot of people's eyes.
Lynn's nodding a lot. What do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean, what was incredible about ICE Network was initially you thought that maybe it was going to be kind of not a PR arm for US figure skating, but a news resource pretty strictly for US figure skating. And that is not what it ended up being. Linda Przygodzki at first, and then of course Mickey, really emphasized that this was an international website. And while there might have been a little bit heavier concentration on U.S. skaters, that, you know, ICE Network was going to cover the Patrick Chans, the Virtue and Moyers, the Japanese skaters, Fernandez, you know, you name it. And I think that was a kind of a surprise to some fans, and also a testament to really Linda and definitely Mickey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, both of us come from pretty strong journalistic backgrounds. So I think that's kind of where our focus was on the site. And we really made it a point to, you know, tell the stories, tell mm-hmm. the honest and true and fair, obviously, stories that were happening in the sport. I think we were able to accomplish that.
One of the journalists that has also been a part for a long time is Sarah Brennan. And she had her Inside Edge column along with Drew Meekins. But let's hear from Sarah.
This is Sarah Brennan. Drew Meekins and I started writing the Inside Edge in 2008. I eventually took over the column, and I also wrote features and interviews and contributed photos. I think my favorite thing about working for ICE Network was getting to know the skaters as people. As time went on, a lot of them felt able to be very open with me. And one example is in 2016, when the media day for Worlds was held on the ice at the Boston Garden. I was the only reporter there who could skate. So first of all, I got to skate in the Boston Garden with most of the newly crowned US champions, which was a very cool experience for me. Both Adam Rippon and Ashley Wagner had skated poorly the last time they competed in Boston in 2014. And after our interviews were finished, I turned off the recorder and we just skated around and talked about how it was just ice and it could be the place for a wonderful experience as well as a bad one. And then at Worlds, they both skated really well and Ashley won the silver medal. And as it happens, that was the last significant competition I ever went to. And I think that Ashley was the last skater that I ever saw. So it was a nice way to finish.
Cool to hear Sarah talking about skating alongside Ashley and Adam. I skated alongside Ashley once for a disastrous video, Mickey.
I remember that. I was there. It wasn't a disaster. It turned out great.
Well, I was a disaster skating.
Maybe the skating itself might have been a disaster. The video was a masterpiece.
I do remember we did a bunch of videos in the last few years, and I remember that day, all five of us sitting in this room have done Bryant Park events, obviously, where they bring the skaters and there's some sort of, you know, charity arm or event. And that day with Ashley was legit negative 10 degrees.
It was maybe the coldest day I've ever been outside and that I felt on my skin. I mean, it was just bone chilling.
Yeah.
Count me in as one of those people who've had a sort of a disastrous skating experience with Ashley as well. When I, you know, one of my outtakes with her video for La La Land that I just like ate it on a back crossover. It was amazing. But back to your point about ICE Network having an international presence, I'm just literally going through and eyeballing our episodes over the last couple of years. And something like 40 to 50% at least of our episodes have mm-hmm. been with non-US skaters. And I think that's a testament to like ICE Network itself being very much a proponent of getting voices that are outside the US, and also just, you know, the willingness of the skating community to be a part of this. And it's just been really, it's been great to have that. And it's been great to try to get as many people who speak English or as many people who will
try
to
speak English,
who will work with us as much as possible. I mean, I still think about my interview with Yevgeny Medvedeva, and I was sweating bullets the entire time.
And her English was great.
Yeah. Just being like, okay, am I going to need a translator? Am I not going to need a translator? And then she was outrageously phenomenal and no problem with answering me with all the questions that I was giving her in English. So
now, Lynn Rutherford, from the early days, was it always Ice Dance for you? Because eventually Ice Dance, obviously, I think, rose to the top. Or am I misspeaking?
I think you're misspeaking.
Of course. Dang it. I'm almost to a strikeout here.
Yeah, no.
What I mean to ask you is just sort of your history, and you obviously detailed the beginning part, but sort of your relationship as it was with Ice Network.
A person who went to Worlds every year.
When did that start?
Maybe, let's say, 1994. I used to give my front row tickets away for the Ice Dance because, honestly, 6.0 Ice Dance didn't really thrill me that much. But I think that IJS, and I've got many people that disagree with me, had sort of saved Ice Dance in that it made it a sport. It made it something that was interesting to watch and that, yeah, you kind of always knew who was going to win, but sometimes you didn't. So that was my thought on it. But I actually wrote quite a few articles that were not Ice Dance oriented. It was a great opportunity to write, as Jackie said, about international skaters. And what impressed me so much was, you know, as a person who can only speak one language fluently, and maybe not even that, so many of these skaters are fluent in English. Yeah. And one that I have to give a real tribute to is Max Trankoff, who actually has humor in a second language. And, you know, looking back on the early days, a lot of articles were done with Max that were very humorous, you know, in tone.
Yeah.
One, for example, maybe 10 years ago at Skate America, I remember he was wearing yellow pants. And
Max's famous yellow pants. Yes. We'll never forget those,
and,
will we?
You know, some fans started this, you know, Trankoff's pants Twitter.
Yeah, right.
And he absolutely got the joke. And when I started joking with him, he's like, "What's wrong with wearing yellow pants? Why must I wear black pants? I want to wear yellow pants." And, you know, it just was a lot of fun dealing with people like Max and other people from Russia, from Japan, that just had great language skills.
When you win the Olympic gold medal, you can wear whatever color pants you want.
Yeah. He was wearing yellow pants in 08, and then he brought them back in 2014. No.
This was a brief time that he wore pure yellow.
Yeah, this was the Olympic season.
Oh, got it. Okay. Yeah. Gotcha. The yellow pants. I won't ever forget those. I'm sure that photo gallery did pretty well for you. Mickey, you mentioned too, as we were sort of talking about this episode and getting ready for it, you guys did some really cool and serious stuff. Did a series on concussions. Also, I think it was Sarah Brandon who did a series on post-retirement and sort of what life looks like. Just kind of talk about those couple items and maybe anything else.
Yeah, so those are a couple of the more like serious pieces that we ran. The concussion thing, you know, that was a long time in the making. It took a lot of planning and kind of figuring out who was going to write what and how, what the theme of each piece was going to be. And I believe Lynn wrote one, and Sarah Brandon wrote one, and Amy Rosewater, I believe, also wrote one as well. So that's one of the things I was really proud of, and I was really happy with how that turned out. And Sarah Brandon's piece about skaters having to deal with post-retirement, it wasn't explicitly called depression at the time. I think the light hadn't been shined kind of on the issue quite as much then. But it definitely, looking back on it, it certainly fits into that subject that's kind of hot now of depression and of kind of trying to find your place in the world once the thing that you've been training for and that you've set as your goal your entire life is now gone. And a lot of skaters were very open and honest with her about the struggle that they had been through. Rachel Flatt was one of them. Alyssa Cisney was another. That's kind of one of those pieces that kind of lives on in Ice Network lore, I guess you could say, as you know, one of those articles that, you know, really stands out in my mind as, one of the best.
Definitely. Was there a point in time where you felt like, you know, now we've hit our stride, or this is, I guess maybe it's hard to think back and...
Yeah, it's hard to really pinpoint, you know, a point in time where that happened, where I felt like, okay, now we're on the map, or now we're being, you know, taken seriously. I did mention to you in an email, you know, Ice Network has been sourced by a number of major news outlets, you know, in their own articles when they do, you know, venture over into figure skating, the New York Times, Forbes, you know, various other, you know, highly regarded
features in Wall Street Journal.
Features in Wall Street Journal. This guy sitting right next to me, Mr. Rocker Skating right here. So yeah, I mean, we've definitely, you know, risen up in the world and have become a very reputable name in news, in sports news. And it did take time for us to build up to become what we did, and kind of, you know, and I think, you know, getting credentialed at the Olympics,
yes,
you know, certainly helped us in Vancouver and Sochi and Pyeongchang. Yep. That helped, you know, raise our profile and, you know, added a lot of legitimacy to
definitely
to the name.
The question I'm putting to our podcast group is the weirdest or most random thing that you ever did in the name of Ice Network. But while they think about that, let's bring in Lois Elfman. She's another contributor, and here's a little of Lois's Ice Network memories.
This is Lois Elfman. I began writing for Ice Network in December 2007. I no longer attend skating competitions, but over the course of 25 years, I got to experience skating history, and Ice Network has enabled me to share that history with readers. Last year, I particularly loved profiling Olympians as a lead-up to the Olympic Winter Games in Pyeongchang. I've also had the opportunity to cover Dancing with the Stars and have great conversations with the skaters who competed on the show as well as their dance partners. There are many favorite moments and great conversations over these past 10.5 years. I have had the chance to interview some current competitors. One of those is Adam Rippon. I learned about his family's traditional Christmas Eve, and I'm still looking forward to tasting his aunt's cooking. Wrapping up my work with Ice Network by reporting on Adam's participation in Dancing with the Stars athletes provides a lovely sense of closure on the past decade. It's been a joy to watch the public embrace him, and it was great to see him dance his heart out in the ballroom. Thank you, Ice Network, for 10.5 great years.
Okay, thanks to Lois for weighing in. So the question I put to the group before is weirdest, most random. Now, you guys are shrugging, but come on. I think for me, the most random thing I did in the name of Ice Network, which was plenty, and Kate and I did a lot of this stuff together, but we went to that weird Tanya and Nancy Museum in Brooklyn that was in that, I mean, they're now like kind of famous. I don't even remember their names, Kate. But we go to this brownstone. They're not there. They finally let us in, but they're like, be really quiet because our neighbors don't like that we have this Tanya and Nancy museum. And we're in their apartment building. And then we go in. You were with us too.
Could that be my answer too? Because
no,
I was with you guys.
No.
Oh, come on.
And no joke, there's a video. We should somehow find the link and share it.
It's there. You can find it. Oh, yeah.
It was literally a dark hallway. And I remember Kate, this was the first time Kate and I worked together, and Kate was trying to produce it. And I was like, it's so dark. What are we going to do? Like, you can't see any of the memorabilia, which 60% came from Lois Elfman, didn't it? Like, a fair amount came from Lois Elfman.
She was very active in the sport, covering the sport at the time of that.
Yes.
I think she was she in Detroit when it happened?
I think she was, yeah, because her press pass was there.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was my most random for sure. I feel like yours was maybe Medvedeva at Cup of Russia. No?
I don't know if that's... Most, I mean, maybe that's the most random, which is pretty vanilla for, I mean, when compared to the Tanya Nancy Museum.
Wow.
You were
in Russia and you like tracked down that interview, like it was a whole effort.
I mean, so the whole reason that whole thing went down was John Wilson Blades had helped kind of set up that interview, and it was with Alexander Kogan, who is a very high up in the Russian Figure Skating Federation. I just remember trying to track everybody down. You know, everybody was very nice and accommodating, but it was like, oh, we finally got to Evgenia, and it was literally her and like a bunch, like three or four other people from the Russian Skating Federation, like, okay, let's go to this conference room. And we like walk down the hallway.
This is random.
It is pretty random. Walk down the hallway where, you know, people with media credentials are not supposed to go. So I felt pretty honored.
You're sweating bullets.
I was sweating bullets. And we're in this conference room that was windowless, and it was just me and Yevgenia and our translator sitting at one end of the table, and then Alexander Kogan and a couple of other of his colleagues sitting at the other end of the table. And I'm just like, is he gonna pull the plug on this interview at any time?
Really?
During this? And it just ended up being like everybody was happy and smiling and like no problem. I'm sure it was, you know, it's not a common thing for them to be doing podcasts, especially with an American outlet. So it's like that was pretty random. I would say though, you and I driving up and down from Lake Placid to and from Lake Placid was pretty random.
I mean, you drove the entire way. What was our radio station? Early 2000s.
It was Pop 2K.
It was Pop 2K exactly. And there was a stop at Five Guys, and there was a stop at McDonald's.
Yeah.
One each way. Of course, we're not out of control. Come on, you've had so many crazy stories.
I just want to add, I made that drive from New York, from the city up to Lake Placid as well for the Junior Grand Prix. Was it in 2012 that we live streamed? It might have been 2012. And I was with, at the time, in the car with a man named Adam Spunberg, who was an editorial producer who also worked on Ice Network at the time. And I believe we had I'm not going to say before people used their phones or GPS to get from point A to point B, but I believe we had printouts of the directions and somehow made a horribly wrong turn, or might have actually missed our turn on our way. And we ended up going at least an hour out of our way into upstate New York, had to backtrack.
And upstate New York, for those of you who haven't been, is rural America.
Yeah, and you wouldn't know that you are on the wrong path really necessarily, because a lot of it kind of just looks the same. It's just a lot of farmland and hills and, you know, small towns up there and places like that. So we eventually realized that we were going in the wrong direction, turned back around, and then, you know, retraced our steps and got on the right path and made it to Lake Placid eventually. But that was a fun time. We made it to Lake Placid.
Come on, Lynn. In the name of Ice Network, your most random.
Oh, I have quite a number of them. But in keeping with the theme of going to Lake Placid and overshooting the mark, I drove with Linda, who was not basically a heavy figure skating person, up to Lake Placid, very much on the strength of, hey, Lynn has been to Lake Placid 100 times and she knows where she's going. And I don't know if I was drinking in the car or what, but we completely overshot the mark.
For the sake of this podcast, we'll say you were not drinking.
Let's say I wasn't. We completely overshot the mark. Ended up, I believe, in Quebec, and had to circle back. You know, Linda's not necessarily the most patient person. And I thought, oh gosh, how many times can I apologize? But anyway, so there was that. There was another time that Linda and I in Reading, one of the very successful Reading Skating Americas.
There was only one in Reading, I believe, right?
No, there was something else in Reading.
One-day event.
Maybe I was there
for
what
happened in Reading.
We got caught in the building after
stuck
in the arena after the building like had shut down. Lights out, doors locked.
That happened to me in San Jose, I believe. No, I'm sorry, Greensboro. This was Greensboro. And I remember being locked in the arena with Phil Hirsch and Christine Brennan trying to find a door, an open door that would let us out of the building.
Right.
We did eventually find one. We did escape.
Too good.
From the Greensboro Coliseum, I believe it's called. But yeah, that was... Because you and I... We're always the last people to leave the arena.
We're always the last ones to leave, and I will say this right now, entirely due to my shortcomings as a writer and in the fact that I kind of like to get quotes from just about everybody involved.
Yes, you do.
In the competition, up to and including the people serving the Cokes and the coffees. So, you know, I have to, again, really thank Linda and Mickey for putting up with that.
It's good journalism. You get quotes from the people.
That's a nice way to put it.
Yeah, I can confirm that Reading has played host to Skate America twice, 2003, 2007.
I thought so.
But Ice Network was not in existence in 2003. So you could have been there in 2003, but not for Ice Network.
I must have been thinking of a Stars on Ice or something.
One of my favorites was I did go to the Cricket Club 2 years ago to interview Javi for Ice Network. And I was there for a tennis event, which was out of the city a little bit, the Rogers Cup. And when I got to the arena, Javi wasn't there. And so I'm waiting for Javi, and he shows up, and he's like, oh, I was at the other rink in Toronto this morning, and I had taken like a $25 Uber to get to the Cricket Club. The other rink was across the street from the tennis. So, you know, I think he was maybe the car behind me on the way in, but
you found each other.
We did. Yeah. We did.
Good.
You know, as digital media has changed a lot, what were the things you guys, we did the podcast a couple years ago that launched in the fall of 2016 with US Figure Skating. You did the app. Obviously, you grew a lot on social media. You know, you're always trying to grow and expand what you were doing on streaming, but what were you trying to do recently?
Yeah, I mean, the social media was a big focus of ours, particularly on Twitter. We've got a pretty substantial following on Twitter. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, this guy, the guy sitting to my left here, Jackie Wong, was a big reason why we kind of changed kind of the tone, our tone on Twitter. For years, I think we were kind of very formal and just kind of, you know, go read this article on Ice Network and that. But kind of when we kind of saw what Jackie was doing and the kind of the following and the reaction that he was getting from his tweets, I thought, well, let's rip this guy off. You know, let's rip off his shtick because it's working. So, you know, we definitely became, you know, we tried to inject more humor and kind of a more conversational tone into what we did, and, you know, using GIFs and stuff like that, and, you know, humorous images and stuff like that. And so I think, you know, I think we started taking ourselves a little less seriously, which I think was important. And I think people kind of saw that and appreciated it. And I think, you know, our following kind of started to grow from that point
on. Yeah, and then I remember after Sochi, I started doing some stuff for you. We did more video stuff with Kate as well. And it was, your onus on me was like, let's have fun with the skaters. Let's bring out their personality, which you were doing before, but just in video form was a new...
Yeah, and we did Facebook Lives. Jackie did Facebook Lives for us from Worlds.
We did Nationals.
Right, yeah.
We did some podcasts live.
Exactly. So yeah, we definitely took advantage of, you know, of the emerging technology that was out there.
And we mentioned, obviously, the concussion series and also the series on post-retirement life. Also did the Person of the Year, the annual celebration, which was kind of a fun, allowing writers to make their case for who the Person of the Year was, and then sort of one would crop to the top, which I never was quite sure. Did you just basically decide?
So that was another blatant ripoff, because, I mean, SI, as Sports Illustrated, you know, SI.com does kind of their own version of that, and they've always done a Sportsman of the Year, and then when they went digital, they would have their writers, each of their writers kind of nominate a different person for that award. So we kind of borrowed that from them.
Yeah.
The way that those are decided, I think I would crowdsource a little bit on those.
Yeah, and you were diplomatic about it.
Yeah, and I would kind of, I would ask people for their top three choices to list them 1, 2, 3, and then kind of based on kind of their submissions, I would assign an athlete or a coach, whoever it may be, to the writer who had it highest up in their rankings. And then as far as like picking the overall winner, that was basically just me deciding who it would be, you know, taking into consideration suggestions from our writers as well.
I am recalling that I called you the overlord at the beginning of this podcast.
So it's all you Twitter followers out there who have been complaining about Sports Person of the Year from Ice Network. Now you know who to blame.
Exactly.
Are there a lot of people complaining about it on Twitter? I haven't seen a single one, Jackie.
What do you mean?
It's just dawning on me that, like, I look at other countries that are big in figure skating. There is no other country that has an outlet like this. There's something to be said about how Ice Network has grown over the last 10 years into something that is reputable, that you guys were talking about, like, internationally reputable, not just something that is for a federation, but something that is for all kinds of people who are really into figure skating.
Well, and I think as a journalist, raising your hand in a media room and saying, "Hi, Nick McCarville with Ice Network," there's a sense of pride in that. I've as a freelancer, I've worked for a lot of people, and sometimes you're a little bit like, "Hi, Nick McCarville with them," and then you ask a question. But another contributor to Ice Network has been Amy Rosewater, and yeah. She remembers her time in Sochi.
Hi, I'm Amy Rosewater, and I covered two Winter Olympics for Ice Network. At the second one, in Sochi, I got to cover the women's event in which Russia's Adelina Sutnikova upset favorite Yuna Kim of South Korea in a very controversial decision. 2 days after the free skate, I went to the exhibition to see if I could get some time with Queen Yuna. And sure enough, almost incredibly, I found her in the mix zone with hardly anyone else around her. This was a stark difference from the practices and competitions when there were literally hundreds of reporters and photographers. She told me how relieved she was that the event was over, and despite the fact that her federation had called for an investigation into the result, she was actually satisfied with the outcome. She very easily could have complained about what many thought was biased judging, but she handled the situation with her usual grace and humility. My interaction with her that day was something that I, as a reporter, will never forget.
Lynn, you're actually in Sochi as well. And
did
you do Sochi, Pyeongchang? Did you do Vancouver for Ice Network too?
Absolutely.
I did, yes.
Triple header.
Yes.
What was it like covering...
The only one who was in all Olympics for Ice Network.
Yeah. Gosh, yes. So we will have another podcast episode that just is dedicated to Lynn Rutherford.
she deserves it.
Yeah, that ought to get a couple of viewers.
No, what I wanted to ask you is what it was like for you to cover Olympics for Ice Network.
Again, it was fabulous. And the thing about the Olympics and in general for me was I really loved being in the mix zone and talking to athletes after they had skated maybe the most important performance of their life,
mm-hmm.
and really trying to be sensitive yet very, very truthful about what was said in the mix zone. And, you know, here I have to sort of give a shout out to a couple of athletes. Certainly in the U.S., Jeremy Abbott, you know, was an athlete that really gave of himself in the mix zone.
Yes, he did.
Sometimes, you know, people criticized him because some of what he said, you know, may have been taken a little bit out of context, or I may have asked him a question and, you know, his answer was sort of magnified. I remember, for example, in Sochi, I asked him, I said, "Hey, you know, you didn't have your greatest performance here in the team event. You know, do you think you got it out of your system?" And I really regret that sometimes.
Do you?
Yeah, because I was trying to be sensitive,
yeah.
Yet his answer,
right.
Let the other reporters who have a job to do sort of act like he was maybe perhaps a bit callous, you know, about the team event. And the other guy that was always fabulous in the mix zone was Patrick Chan. I really think he used it as therapy. And I think
did
he
you
was,
get paid for that therapy?
Me? No. Yeah. But he was, is, and was, and whatnot, an incredible skater who really gave of himself in the mix zone, you know, as did several other skaters. Those are the two that first come to mind.
Lynn is right. Patrick was kind of always a favorite of ours, kind of behind the scenes, very quotable, you know, just extremely honest, just said exactly what was on his mind. We as journalists and as, you know, people who, you know, run websites and are trying to attract attention and bring traffic into our site, you know, always appreciate, right. Always appreciate the candor that certain athletes speak with.
And he went out the same way that he came in. Remember in 2009, you know, he was first coming up like behind Evan and won a silver, I believe. And, you know, they held a special press conference I kind of snuck into because I wasn't Canadian. And, you know, he was sitting there saying, "Hey, you know, here I am." And, you know, very, very arrogant and very confident. And then he went out with a lot of humility. And that was in Pyeongchang, and where he said, "You know, hey, I was blessed with good skating skills. I was not blessed with a good triple axel."
I remember at 2009 Worlds, I was writing like a, I guess like a daily column, you would call it, for Ice Network. And I remember he and Brian Joubert got into a bit of a thing there.
Sure did.
A war of words. And I remember reporting on that. And that was, you know, the two of those guys, neither of them was going to back down from the other one, was going to give an inch. There was a lot of entertainment. He provided a lot of entertainment.
He did. And,
for
and sure. Patrick's lucky that Joubert's mother did not cloud him over the head with one of his skates.
I feel like the two of you need to start some sort of like the stories we can't tell on Ice Network blog.
Oh, we would love to do that.
I almost wish I had done that. Almost wish I had been able to say a whole lot of things.
When the stories were fresh, when the memories were fresh. Now looking back, a lot of them have kind of faded. But yeah, at the time, there was a lot of fodder, that's for sure.
They're good dinner material, though.
Yeah.
I go out
for the tabloids.
And when we turn these microphones off, we might continue some of those stories. Mickey, one thing you guys did earlier this month, the 30 biggest stories in skating.
You're still doing it
in the Ice Network era, but people can obviously find that on icenetwork.com. What has that brought up? Obviously, I think it would probably... Maybe there are a lot of aha things or things that you forgot.
Absolutely. There's definitely some things on there that you kind of forget about because they happened, almost a decade ago. So yeah, that was just an idea I had just to kind of, look back on the time that Ice Network has been around and kind of just highlight, some of the biggest moments in skating over the last 11 years. And we're about halfway through right now, and we got 15 or so more to go. And I hope people are following along on Twitter and on the site and reading each of the little write-ups that I do each day, and are anticipating what the number one biggest moment in the Ice Network era is going to be, biggest story.
I mean, I don't know it, but I'm just guessing it's probably has to do with some Japanese skater who's really popular.
There's going to be an element of that, I would say, but not, I would say that's not exactly right.
Oh. Stay tuned, Jackie Wong.
Interesting.
Well, no one quite writes like Jean-Christophe Berlot, and it turns out no one quite speaks like him either. Here is the, always creative Frenchman on his Ice Network memories.
Hello, I'm Jean-Christophe Berlot, and I'm talking to you from Paris, France, where I live. I contributed to Ice Network right from the start in 2007, and I was honored to write the Person of the Year story this year. It's been a tremendous honor for me to write for Ice Network. I've been passionate about figure skating for many years. Peggy Fleming and Janet Lynn transmitted the virus of skating to me, as we say in French. When you are blessed with a passion for life, then you have two missions. One is to live it, one is to share it. Ice Network allowed me to do both. As a skating fan, you're marked forever by the skaters of your own generation. My own idols were Brian Orser, Mo and Min, Ty and Randy. Ice Network gave me another golden age. I could report from the major competitions in Europe and listen to the greatest artists of the sport explain their art and hopes. I worked a lot. I actually didn't sleep or eat much at those competitions, but I lived deeper than I ever had. Thank you, Ice Network team. You've been so supportive. And thank you, all of you. It's been a privilege and a blessing.
I love, first off, that accent. Oh, but
he's amazing.
How did you discover...
Well, he wrote for US Figure Skating, for the website, usfigureskating.org. He covered Trophée Bompard and Lalique back way, way back in the day. Lalique. Yeah, Lalique. You know, he's always, we love JC. JC is one of our favorites. The fans love him. He's a very unique style. Unbelievable guy. He and I have traded emails back and forth. There's nobody, just his emails themselves should be published, because they're just, the writing in these emails is just incredible. I've actually only met him in person one time.
That's crazy.
Yeah, one time at Worlds in 2016 in Boston. And, he was everything I hoped he would be and more. So
Was he wearing a scarf? I would assume he was.
I don't think he was. No? I don't think he was. What? He probably does not look the way you picture him
looking. I literally, you know what I mean? Like, if you have a picture. Like, holding, like, right. a board of paint and
exactly
a beret. Is that
yeah? No, maybe a glass of Bordeaux
not as
or something like that.
As that.
No, he's not at all. He's,
those are all compliments, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. No, no, absolutely.
He paints with his typewriter.
He absolutely does.
In the way that he writes.
Yeah, he's fantastic. We love him.
Okay, before we kind of wrap up, say our goodbyes, et cetera, what have we missed here? We did not discuss Deadspin's highlighting of the Starlight Synchro GIF.
Yes, that was...
I actually have never seen.
That, you haven't?
No.
What is wrong with you, Nick?
I don't know.
You got to go check it out.
I do.
So this was the synchronized skating team, the Starlights, had a particularly energetic and enthusiastic reaction to their scores being announced while they were in the Kiss and Cry at one national championships a few years ago. So I made a GIF of it, and I just sent it to one of the Deadspin editors just because I thought it was pretty funny, just how animated all
so
these...
So you sent it?
I sent it.
Yeah.
And he thought highly enough of it. He was amused by it enough that he put it up on the site. And so that was just kind of a neat thing. It was, Deadspin was, was a pretty big deal and still continues to be. So just to get the Ice Network name on there, I thought was pretty amusing.
And Ice Network goes viral.
That's the voice.
Who's that?
Kate Sullivan, who is our fearless producer. I brought Kate over just because we're going to say our goodbyes now on the podcast. But I mean, you, I think, you've maybe watched more figure skating than even Jackie Wong.
I have watched the Shibatanis grow up. They were 11 when I started working on Ice Network. I think they were 11, and now they're like 22 or something.
But detail for people, because not only just the podcast, but I mean, you were cutting video and you had a lot of weird producing.
Yeah, I made that viral video. I actually started downloading some of the clips because I need to make a reel because Ice Network is disappearing.
Do you have a favorite memory? I mean, we did go to the Nancy Tanya Museum.
I liked all the needlepoint work that was like Nancy and Tanya in that museum.
Was that the museum as well?
Epic.
Yes.
I also really enjoyed meeting some of the older figure skaters that were like, at the galas.
No, I mean,
I never thought I would ever know this much about figure skating.
Same.
Same.
No, you knew you'd always, you knew that this was your future.
Oh, yeah. This was always in my life plan.
While you have the microphone, Jackie Wong, a farewell of sorts, or obviously thank you for doing this podcast with me, with us the last couple of years, but this is goodbye, at least for now, for us and Ice Talk.
Yeah, goodbye for now. Hello pretty soon, hopefully. We'll, I'm sure, do more collaboration in the future. I mean, I Mickey, thank you for having the gumption to bring on someone like me, basically a rogue blogger who ended up becoming something or other. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really been a phenomenal experience. It's just, I think Ice Network has done a lot for figure skating, not only in the U.S., but around the world. And whatever you think about Ice Network streaming qualities, like there have been a lot of things that Ice Network has done outside of just streaming competitions that have benefited the skating community. And selfishly for me, Ice Talk is one of those things, and Ice Talk has brought a new dimension to the way that we cover figure skating in the U.S.
Awesome. Well put. Lynn Rutherford.
I guess I'd like to just say thank you, first and foremost, to Mickey Brown for working with me all these years, and certainly Linda for hiring me. And also to every figure skater who gave me interviews, who called me on the phone, who really opened up to me. And I think there were a lot of them. And frankly, to fans that read my articles and corresponded with me on Twitter. I loved talking to fans on Twitter. I'm just sorry that I didn't do more of it.
Hmm. I have a big thanks to you, personally. No, really, I wrote for...
I'm touched by by all these thanks.
As you roll your eyes.
Yeah.
I mean, I wrote for NBC for Sochi and really got that job sort of out of luck, because I covered tennis for London and they needed someone quickly, and I was a known entity to them. And figure skating, I had a lot of learning to do. But after the Olympics in Sochi, I had a lot of energy for the sport, and you were very much like, let's make videos, let's, you know, I want you to write. And I think I put it in your ear pretty early that I wanted to do a podcast.
You did. You did.
It took a few. It took a few.
I'll give you credit. I'll give you credit for planting the seed.
A couple lunches in Chelsea before we finally nailed things down, and then obviously things got even better with Jackie coming along. But no, and I think Lynn's so right. Like, we have gotten the chance to speak with athletes all over the world and share their stories, but most importantly, the fans, the readers, the viewers, the listeners that consume the content and are excited by it too. The biggest thanks goes to all of you guys out there. And the last microphone standing goes to you, Mickey Brown, so no pressure.
Oh, my gosh. I can't believe this. Well, no, I mean, I obviously want to thank the four people who are in the room with me now, Nick, Lynn, Jackie, and Kate, for helping make Ice Talk a really great product. I thought we did a really great job with this podcast, and I'm incredibly proud of the work we did on this. Bigger picture, also, you know, the contributions all you guys made to Ice Network, as well as people who are not in this room right now, the other writers, as I mentioned before, Linda, who, you know, was the first, you know, editor, I guess you could say, of Ice Network, who really got the site off the ground. One person we have not mentioned here who I also would like to give a shout out to is Laura Fawcett. Some of you might know the name Laura Fawcett. A lot of you will not know the name Laura Fawcett. She worked at US Figure Skating for many years, was my, I guess I could call her my mentor there. And she really kind of had the idea of Ice Network kind of before Ice Network came to be. There was something called the Figure Skating Channel, which probably almost nobody remembers, which was a website that existed in 2005, 2006, which was kind of a precursor to Ice Network, where that it housed figure skating videos. There was some live coverage on there. The subscription price actually in those days was $99.99. Just to give you an idea of what a bargain an Ice Network subscription was, it was cost twice that much.
13 years ago.
Yeah. And who knows what the quality was back then. But it was probably not as good as what you get now. She oversaw that and kind of, she had just was kind of on her way out of US Figure Skating as Ice Network was kind of being launched. But she get there's I owe a huge debt of gratitude to her. And also all the people at MLB Advanced Media and at BAMTech Media who work in the traffic department, production, graphic design, customer service, everybody that had any hand in this website. As I mentioned Adam Spunberg before. There was Adam Berger, Peter Mulroy, also were other editorial producers who worked on the site. There's a whole list of names. I'm sure I'm forgetting people. Sam Donovan, who did an unbelievable job.
And his cat jacket.
And his cat jacket, as Kate Sullivan just pointed
just
out.
Writing that down.
Yeah.
I can never think of him, but then when I do, the
work that he did for Ice Network, I think goes so unnoticed, and I think he's one of the most underrated people that we've ever had work for us. I think
he's great.
His writing is incredible.
Incredible.
He's very talented. Seriously. Both in fashion and in his writing.
Yeah.
So, I was a huge fan of his just as being a contestant, on Project Runway. And the fact that, you know, he agreed to write for us for a couple seasons and do his fashion reviews, I thought was fantastic. I think that's a wrap, huh?
Awesome. Well, cheers, everyone. Cheers.
Cheers.
Clink, clink. Cheers to Ice Network, to this podcast, and from the downtown studios, actually from Jackie's apartment here in Manhattan, this has been episode 72 of Ice Talk, the Figure Skating Podcast. From Ice Network. Thanks to my guests on this episode, Jackie Wong, Mickey Brown, Lynn Rutherford, and our producer, our fearless producer, Kate Sullivan. You can find all of our episodes on Apple Podcasts. You can also go to icenetwork.com and go to the fans page to hear all of them, including Sam Donovan, Evgenia Medvedeva, Patrick Chan, Jeremy Abbott, and so many more. And 11 times, Lynn Rutherford, 11 times. Thank you all so much for listening. We really appreciate it, and thank you for being figure skating fans. And once again, thanks for taking us for a spin.